Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we have the pleasure of presenting a reading of the story that won the 2016 EQMM Readers Award. It's by an author who had previously distinguished himself in the field of crime fiction with the Seamus Award-winning novel White Heat and other notable work. But he's a relative newcomer to EQMM. Paul DeMarcs is a native of Los Angeles, and his Readers Award-winning story is set in that city amidst the ghosts of past crime writers and their creations. It introduces a new and intriguing private detective who will appear in future tales. Here is Paul DeMarcs reading his story, Ghosts of Bunker Hill.
I stood at the bottom of the hill staring up at Angel's Flight, the famous little funicular railway in the Bunker Hill section of Los Angeles that brought people from Hill up to Olive. I desperately wanted to ride those rails up to the top, but now the two twin orange and black cars were permanently moored in the middle, suspended in midair, ghosts from another time. Back in the day, the hill was home to the Swells. When they moved west, the desperate moved in. John Fonte rented a room on the hill, wrote Ask the Dust and Dreams from Bunker Hill there. By the time Raymond Chandler wrote about it, he was calling it Old and Shabby Town. If Chandler thought the streets were mean back then, he should see them now. It finally rained in Los Angeles, rained on Angel's Flight. Seems like it rained a lot more when I was a kid, sharp needles of clear water dancing on my skin, washing it clean, cleansing the air. Somebody stole something from me. Something I didn't know if I'd ever get back. I was playing hooky from work on a Friday, just needed an extra day off, lazing about, streaming Chinatown. It was just about the end, my favorite part. The doorbell rang. Damn. Somebody always wanted something. If the telemarketers didn't get you, the door-to-door salesman would. I opened the door. Kevin Birch? He had a package in his hand, long, skinny, white box. Looked like flowers. Who would be sending me flowers? I was looking at the package, not his face. Yes? He dropped the flowers. The box split open, the flowers bleeding onto the front porch. A glint of shiny metal flared in the sunlight. Nothing compared to the flare when he pulled the trigger. Oh, shit. I hit the ground. He didn't stick around to see if he'd done the job successfully. I tried to impress his face, his clothes on my mind, but all I could see were those damned flowers. My eyes faded shut. Who are you? A uniformed cop with attitude asked the black man as he walked up to the crime scene tape choking off the perimeter of our property on Carroll Avenue. The cop moved to block, gave him the once over, the twice over. Howard Hamm. Howard reached for a sleek, streamlined, sterling silver business card holder inside his Armani coat. The cop's hand instinctively landed on the butt of his holstered pistol. He couldn't take his eyes off Howard. Howard stood 6 feet tall, dressed like a model out of Ebony or GQ. Clothes make the man, he always said. His razor-thin Cab Calloway mustache just added to the effect. He thought the 21st century needed a little classing up. Well, Howard Hamm, this is a crime scene. I'm a friend of the victim. I'm also a licensed private investigator. He gingerly handed a business card to the cop. Or maybe the perp returning to the scene of the crime. It looked like it was about to get ugly. Howard, my wife Nicole called from the front porch, interrupting things just in time. She ran up to him. It's okay, she said to the cop. I called him. He's a friend of the family. The cop reluctantly let him slip under the yellow tape. Nicole, it's awful, Howard. Someone shot Kevin. Nicole wasn't an emotionally demonstrative person, but she actually had a tear in her eye. Why? What happened? I don't know. They have any suspects yet? Nicole shook her head. The tear rolled down her cheek. My nosy neighbor, Sally, called on my cell. She found him. I couldn't believe it. Still can't. Where's Kev now? Howard said, handing her a sparkling white linen handkerchief for the tear. They wouldn't let me see him. Howard and I were best friends, an odd couple. We'd met at USC, though we were Bruins at heart. The only two dormies more interested in movies than video games and Trojan football. It made us fast friends, even though we were from different worlds, different sides of the tracks, if you will. That only made us closer. We had a curiosity about each other's backgrounds, cultures. Nothing weird, just curiosity. I grew up in Los Feliz, he in South Central. Same city, different universes. If you want me working officially, you have to hire me so I have some standing with the cops. Of course, Howard, I knew I could count on you. To the cops, it's just another shooting, another statistic. But you're his friend. How much? $1, just to make it legal. Check, not cash. That's Howard, $1 to make it legal. He didn't want the money, he'd do it out of friendship. He'd find the SOB who shot me and figure out why. He was a damn good PI. He had the background for it, cop, DA investigator. Did some time in the service. He wouldn't talk about that much. I figured it was top secret and all that. He stood with Nicole, shielding her from the inevitable reporters and stringers who sit around all day listening to the police band, waiting for an if it bleeds, it leads story they can jump on. A uniformed cop stood with them, making sure they didn't concoct some kind of story as if they'd need one, as if either of them had anything to do with this. Howard's eyes scanned the knots of people gathering on their front stoops and behind the crime scene tape. Neighbors, delivery people, gawkers, even Charles Powell, one of my co-workers. What was he doing there? Nicole walked Howard toward our house, my beautiful Queen Anne Victorian. They walked up the front steps to the porch, dodging the blood and body outline. We were only the second owner since the house was moved from Bunker Hill. This house was our baby. Criminalists, cops, and all the usual suspects were all over everything, fouling up my beautiful house. With fingerprint powder and other tools of the trade, my skin crawled. Kevin would go insane if he saw what they're doing to the house, Howard said. That lightened the moment for Nicole, brought a slight smile to her face. Detective Sergeant Sandy Baker and D1 Aaron Bowen finally showed up, took charge. Bowen's pantsuit and flat shoes gave her a utilitarian look, though not unattractive. The searching eyes said cop. Baker didn't seem to care much about clothes either. Looked like he bought his suit from one of those 3-for-the-price-of-1 places down on Los Angeles Street. Howard and Nicole were ushered into the study to the left of the foyer. He sat in a Victorian parlor chair, she on the fainting couch. It had taken forever to find just the right couch for that room. Baker and Bowen entered. Baker grabbed a delicate needlepoint chair, dragging it across the parquet floor. Not just any parquet floor, but the original floor from when the house was built in the 1890s. The sound of it made me squirm the way chalk on a blackboard does. Baker leaned the chair back on its hind legs, the top rail digging into the wainscoting, the rear legs into the floor. They creaked. I wanted to go after him. Howard cringed. Nicole just looked numb. After some basic preliminary questions, they left Howard in the room with a uni, took Nicole across the hall to the parlor. Yes, we call the living room the parlor. Howard traced his finger along the gash. Baker's chair made in the wainscoting, shook his head. He paced the room under the watchful eyes of the cop stationed at the door. He examined the antique books and old-fashioned reproduction William Morris wallpaper, but I was sure in his mind he was figuring what his first move would be. Bowen returned, ordered Howard to sit back in the parlor chair. She sat opposite him in the chair Baker had used, but didn't lean it into the wall. She hit him with harder questions as if he was a suspect. It was clear he didn't know anything. I'm as curious as you, he said. I hope you're more curious than that, she winked. He smiled. She left him alone again. Electric orange sun streaked in through the window, making a parallelogram of light on the parquet floor. The sky frosted silver at the edge of the clouds, and the sun sank into the ocean somewhere off to the west. Street lamps came on, shedding golden light on the street. Houses lit up inside and out. It was a postcard beautiful night, the kind of night that made me fall in love with Carroll Avenue. A trip to the past and an oasis of calm in the heart of L.A., a safe oasis until today. Nicole came into the study. How'd it go? Howard asked. They were fine. Didn't shine a light in my face or anything. She twirled her wedding ring. They always suspect the spouse. Ask you anything unusual? Just where I was. Did we have any marital strife? That's what they said, marital strife. But no, nothing out of the ordinary. Well, they'll be back at you till they fully clear you. I'm not concerned. I didn't do anything, and I was at work when it happened. The thin blue line of cops, criminalists, and other functionaries eventually departed, leaving Nicole and Howard a polluted trail of chemical spray residue, fingerprint powder, and the other detritus of a crime scene investigation, not to mention a Rorschach blot of dried blood fanning out from the door on the front porch. He ran his finger over splotches of black fingerprint powder on the inside banister. Nicole offered a cup of tea in the kitchen. He sat on a stool by the counter. Most people wanted new, streamlined kitchens, stainless steel, and wood du jour. Our kitchen retained its Victorian flavor with white cabinets, porcelain sinks, and a reproduction stove that looked old but ran new. Kevin's right. Such a beautiful house, Howard said. They have to wreck everything. They know the guy didn't get beyond the front door. I know they have to dig out the bullets, but why spray everything up? They're just doing their jobs. He looked around the house, the ornately carved door frame and strategically placed antique knickknacks. As many times as I've been here, I never really took a good look at the house, but while you were in with the detectives, I thought it was old, just old. I stopped looking after that. But it really is something. I think I'm seeing it through Kev's eyes for the first time. It's nice. I like modern better, though, like you. But Kevin loves it here. I think if he could have lived in the 1940s, he would have been happy, she said. He always wished he did. There are two kinds of people, those who escape to the past and those who want to escape from it, Howard said. Either way, they always think there's something better than where they are right now. But the past always looks better in hindsight. Kind of like coffee. The aroma always promises more than the taste delivers. She set her coffee cup down, her eyes roaming the room. I always felt second fiddle to this house. Howard smiled. You're jealous of the house? It's worse than a mistress. Takes more time and more money. Money we could have used to travel or invest, but I guess now's not the time to be worrying about that. I guess not. How are you holding up? Well, I've had better days, Nicole said in that ironic, understated way that helped me fall in love with her. I remember the day I met her. Howard and I were at a mixer, and he dared me to ask her out. I watched the two of them in the kitchen now, thought about what a nice couple they made. If I hadn't married her, I wonder if she would have ended up with Howard. I felt a twinge of jealousy. Yeah, I bet, he put his arm on her shoulder. She fell into him, soft sobs, landing tears on his Zegna shirt. She went to sit. He pulled the chair out for her. It's funny, you're kind of old-fashioned, chivalrous, but also very modern. Kevin dresses modern, but lives in some fantasy Los Angeles of the past. That's why we live down here, you know. I know. Howard slipped a little digital voice recorder from his pocket, flashed it at Nicole so she knew she was being recorded. He said, I guess I'll start with the standard questions. Did Kev have any enemies? You knew him as well as I did, maybe better in some ways. She toyed with her hair, but no, I don't think so. He stopped, gazed up at the stairs as if he'd seen something. Someone. Shook his head and it was gone. What is it, Howard? Do you see something? I see a lot of things, things I never noticed before. Feel them too. Feel what? Ghosts. Ghosts of the past here. This house has history. Nicole says I live in the past, not even the real past, but a romantic past Los Angeles made up of the likes of Raymond Chandler, John Fonte, and James M. Cain. If only I could get some help from them, Chandler and Marlowe or Fonte and Bandini. I guess you can't only live in the past. Wish I could have, though. Howard and Nicole wanted to escape the past. I wanted to escape into it. For me, Nicole moved to our classic refurbished Victorian on Carroll, and I'll love her always for that. In the 1960s, someone had the brilliant idea to tear down the old Victorians on Bunker Hill, many of which had become SROs and flop houses, and build a sparkling new downtown of gleaming high-rises, but it won't be long till they're shabby town, too. High-rise shabby town. Luckily, several of the grand old dames were saved, moved to Carroll Avenue a few miles away, including ours. Every time I walked those creaky wooden floors, I felt the presence of the past. The people who'd lived there. Not ghosts, but history. Something Los Angeles doesn't appreciate. Carroll Avenue was close to downtown where I work, but the whole short street looked like something out of the early 1900s. LA. I loved everything about it. Rain cleansed blue skies, pushed the bright, cheery SoCal sun through the kitchen window where it landed in a hard wedge of light on the island, splintering off Nicole's first coffee of the day. The cheery sunlight and Nicole's mood were at odds. I knew her well enough to know her mood would win. Nicole thumbed through the mail. There wasn't much else to do. Face drawn tight, worried about me, I guess. She reached for the phone. Howard, it's Nicole. Something's come up. Howard jumped into his Mustang GT convertible for the trip from his glistening Bunker Hill apartment tower to slip back in time to our retro street that at least on the surface had an air of gentility and decorum. Before he was even inside the house, Nicole handed him an envelope. The return address read Vine, V-I-N-E. Howard pulled out the enclosed letter. Shit. It never even occurred to me to tell them about Chance. He had several more years in jail, Nicole said. The letter's postmarked 6 weeks ago. I know, but it just got here today. You know how the post office is. Howard headed to the door, his eyes drifting toward the study. Several empty moving boxes were thrown into the corner of the room. My wandering tour of the City of Angels and Devils found me standing at the bottom of the Spring Street steps of City Hall, gazing up at the granite Art Deco facade. More substantial than the movie sets of Hollywood, not all that far away. Like so much of L.A., City Hall was a star of more movies than just about any other building on the planet. Hell, star of more movies than many movie stars, everything from the Daily Planet building and the old Superman TV series to playing itself in L.A. Confidential. Angel's Flight and Bunker Hill starred in their share of movies, too, like the noirs Crisscross and Kiss Me Deadly. And like everyone in L.A., I wanted to be the star of my own movie. And now I was a star of a mystery. Howard was filling in for Marlowe, and I was my own MacGuffin. I barely knew how I got here, but somehow I'd made my way down Sunset Boulevard, past Chinatown, where we know things are best left forgotten. I could see Philip Marlowe taking the City Hall steps two at a time, and trouble is my business. Lighting a cigarette, the acrid smoke tinged the air. He stood next to me. I shook my head to clear it. He was still there, maybe, but I sure as hell felt his presence. I lit a cigarette of my own as a cold wind blew up out of nowhere. I'm not much of a smoker, but what could it hurt? Gazing up at City Hall as if it were some kind of monumental temple to the City of Angels, I wondered if it could help me figure out who shot me. There was always something mystical about the old parts of downtown L.A. for me, the romance of Fonte and Chandler, even if it had changed so much since their time. Maybe I'd read too many crime novels, and now crime came home to me. City Hall was no help. I didn't have any better idea who shot me than Detectives Baker and Bowen. I'm not saying I was a perfect angel, hell no, but I didn't think I'd pissed anyone off enough to put a bullet in me. Anyone but Brian Chance, that is. Howard sat on the Bunker Hill steps that meandered up or down the hill, depending on your point of view, across from L.A.'s Central Library. He stared at the library's Art Deco architecture, contrasting it with the tall, conspicuous steel and glass towers that dwarfed it, making it look like a relic from another time. I could see him sitting there, thinking, trying to put it all together. But there were still too many pieces missing. The one new element was that Brian Chance was out on early parole and he had a beef with me. An unmarked cop car pulled to the curb, lights flashing. Traffic angrily rolled around. The driver got out, walked to Howard. "You look glum," Bowen said. "You know, I never cared about old Los Angeles, but Kevin did. He loved this city, only I'm not sure he loved it as it is or more as it was, and I never believed in ghosts, but I feel them here. He told me about what happened on Bunker Hill, how they tore it down for redevelopment. But if you sit here looking at the old Central Library across the street and what's left of old L.A., you can feel it inside you. You sure you're all right?" "They say all those houses on Carroll are haunted," he said, "especially the ones that were moved from Bunker Hill like Kev's. I never got why he dug that place, but I see it now. It has history, not only his and Nicole's, but history. Like a living, breathing history of some long-gone L.A., only it isn't gone, not really. Howard changed subjects. Thanks for meeting me on a Saturday, Detective Bowen. Crime never sleeps. She offered him a lifesaver. I'll have to use that for the title of my autobiography someday, he laughed. So tell me, is Nicole a suspect? We're old friends, you know. Kevin, too. You know the drill. All spouses are suspects till cleared. She clear? Not yet. Looks like she will be, though. Has a pretty good alibi, and we can't find a motive. She called me to the house this morning, showed me this. He handed Detective Bowen the letter Nicole had given him from Vine, the California Department of Corrections Victim Notification Service. The letter stated that Brian Chance was due to be released on parole 2 weeks ago. She just got the letter in today's mail. So Chance is out 2 full weeks, and now Birch is dead. Typical government red tape. Here's the story. Howard continued staring at the library, couldn't take his eyes off of it. Kevin testified against Brian Chance in his trial for aggravated assault. He ended up going away for 7 years, largely based on Kevin's testimony. So the trial was 7 years ago? More like 3 years ago. Guess he got out early for good behavior, he said. And he's been out 2 weeks. Kevin gets shot and the letter comes a day late. Of course, I hadn't known that Brian Chance was out on parole. Just like Howard didn't know that the Bunker Hill steps were relatively new, built in the 1990s, and not some old L.A. landmark. But they'll have a special memory for some kid 20 years from now when she remembers her pop buying them hot dogs from a street vendor and eating them on the steps. I didn't get a good look at the guy who shot me, wondered where Brian Chance was when the bullet hit the bone. Was he dropping a box of flowers on my front porch? Where was he now? I wandered back toward Bunker Hill, not fearing the drifters and bangers. Found myself in the Grand Central Market where Fonte's alter ego Bandini goes to bump into girls, accidentally on purpose. The market is more upscale today, but there's still plenty of flirting to be had. And it's right across from the new and improved Angel's Flight. Moved a block away from the original site during all the redevelopment shuffling. The original Angel's Flight ran for decades. The new one for only 5 years before an accident forced it to be shut down. Yep, new and improved. I love the smells of Grand Central. Spicy Mexican foods, fruits, coffee, and kombucha. And business. Everybody hustling. I made my way through the giant cavern thinking about my situation. Seemed like the case would wrap up pretty soon, open and shut. Brian Chance was out of prison. I had helped put him there. I had a bullet hole or two in me. Howard would figure it out. One thing leads to another, and Brian Chance goes back to jail. Chance's parole officer wasn't happy about having to look up his address on his day off. Bowen persuaded him. Chance lived in the Adams-Normandy area of L.A., not one of the city's choice neighborhoods. Another place where old Victorians used to dominate. Some still lived there. USC student housing, or in this case, parolee housing, cheap and no questions asked. They cruised south on Vermont in her unmarked. I better call for backup, she said. What's wrong with me? I ain't chopped liver. You're not a cop, either. Used to be. Marine, too. I'm coming in. Against my better judgment. They pulled up in front of a beat-up, beat-down craftsman house on 20th Street. Bowen knocked. A Hispanic woman answered the door. Yes? Bowen flashed ID on her. We're looking for Brian Chance. Brian Chance? Nobody here with that name. The woman let them look around. There were no signs of a man living on the premises. He gave a false address to his P.O., Bowen said as they drove off. She was on her cell to the P.O. before they hit the first stop sign. When we find him, I wish we could bust his door in like the old days, she said. I thought women cops were supposed to be sensitive. Yeah, well, sometimes you just want to bust heads. Bowen couldn't reach Chance's P.O. She looked up his known associates on the car's computer. They checked with two of them. They didn't even know Chance was out of jail, or so they said. They swung by Nicole's and my house. Twilight cast its threatening shadow over the street. Darkness swept the sky, dissolving from light azure to dark indigo. Triple-globed street lamps shimmered on the retro street. Bowen and Howard tried to get Nicole to think of someone besides Chance who might have it in for me. Nicole thought Chance was the most likely suspect. but also maybe Powell, my co-worker, who I beat out for a promotion, and a guy named Reeves, who'd cut me off on the road. Short list. Howard's eyes wandered over our house again. Those eyes saw everything. What was he looking for? What was he seeing? Kevin always said he could feel the ghosts of Raymond Chandler and John Fonte here, especially when the jasmine or honeysuckle was in bloom, Nicole said, tamping her emotions down. I didn't even know who either of them were when I met him. Yeah, I like to hang with Easy Rollins myself. Easy who? Both Nicole and Bowen chimed. Never mind. Still hoping for inspiration, I parked myself on a bench in Pershing Square, just a short jog from Bunker Hill, hoping to figure out who shot me. Lit a cigarette right where Bandini did and asked the dust. Smoke swirled from the cigarette like a... snake enthralled by the tones of a snake charmer's punji. A cool breeze made my whole body shiver. It wasn't a cold wind, but it made me shiver anyway. Bandini sat on the bench next to me, smoking just like in the book. My head felt light. I knew Bandini wasn't there, like I'd known Marlowe wasn't there at City Hall. Still, they seemed real enough, maybe just the cigarette smoke making me lightheaded. Like I said, I'm not much of a smoker. Bandini had said there were no tall buildings in the square. You should see it today. Steel and glass spikes sprout from every available space. And when nothing's available, the wrecking ball makes a new empty lot. Much of the park greens have been cemented over with little pinpricks of green here and there like a garnish on the side of your plate. I felt Bandini at my side as I stared across at the Biltmore Hotel. No, I'm not crazy. I'm not saying I saw a ghost, just a feeling. Then something flitted by on the edge of my peripheral vision. Across the street in the Biltmore. JFK sipping champagne cocktails at his inauguration party. Swells drinking bathtub gin in the Gold Room. A sort of speakeasy for the upper crust during Prohibition, hidden in the depths of the Biltmore. Oscar ceremonies and celebs, Mae West and Carmen Miranda partying, ghosts of the past. Now I wasn't sure what was real and what wasn't. And Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, wandering the halls aimlessly. It's the last place she was seen alive. Maybe the last place for me, too. While waiting to get a line on Chance, Howard shot the Mustang west on Sunset. Even Marlowe did time on Sunset. I wonder if Howard felt Marlowe's presence over his shoulder. He found Charles Powell watering his emerald green lawn in the middle of the drought. Powell didn't look happy to see him get out of the slick Mustang in his fancy suit. Howard flashed his ID, went into his spiel. Yeah, he got the promotion, Powell said. I deserved it. Sure as hell better than that poseur, Birch. I was pissed, but not pissed enough to land myself in jail. When was the last time you saw Kevin? Thursday afternoon, at work. And Mrs. Birch? Powell was a good-looking guy. Not as good-looking as Tyrone Power, but better-looking than Bogey. Of course, Bogey had played both Marlowe and Spade, so that gave him extra points. I could see what Howard was getting at. Whatever you're thinking never happened. Now get out. His next stop was Jason Reeves, the guy who'd cut me off on the freeway. When I honked at him, he'd gone ballistic on me, followed me for miles. I thought he was going to kill me then and there, but maybe for him revenge was a dish better served cold. I'd gotten his license just in case. Nicole had given it to Howard. Reeves made Howard look small. That was like saying Shaquille O'Neal made Charles Barkley look small. Howard stood his ground, even as Reeves leaned into him. Yeah, I'm known for my road rage, Reeves said. You seem proud of it. Been to anger management 3 times. Working well. Maybe you better leave before it stops working again. I rode Angel's Flight back and forth. If it went in a circle instead of up and down, my head would be spinning. It was sort of spinning anyway. Who would want to do this to me? Chance was the most likely, but I'd also pissed off Powell and Reeves. And people had been known to off people for a lot less than stealing their promotion or getting in a road rage incident. Maybe it was someone I didn't even know I'd pissed off. Howard stopped by our house Sunday afternoon to fill Nicole in on his progress, or lack of. He parked, walked up the walkway to the house, passed for sale and open house today signs stabbed into the lawn. He stopped a moment, gazed at the house, at the lattice work and the fish scale shingles that I'd so painstakingly restored, the colored glass in the windows, the house, my art, my masterpiece, every inch lovingly renovated, the blood stain, body outline, and fingerprint powder on the front porch already scrubbed and gone. Just the echo of a little dark spot to say I'd fallen there. If you didn't know, you wouldn't even see it. Howard stepped warily over it. A well-dressed woman in her 30s came up the walk. She smiled at Howard. Here for the open house? I was just about to take the sign down, but if... Not a buyer, just a friend of the family. Oh, the woman sounded disappointed. Mrs. Birch isn't home today. We prefer showing houses with the owner out. Too bad she has to sell. Well, you know, she can't really stay after what happened. I'll take a card if you have one. They exchanged cards. It's a great neighborhood, she said. Very historic. Bowen and Baker had checked with the other witnesses and even the jury members at Chance's trial. None dead, none wounded, none threatened. Only me. Lucky me. Seems that since no one else had been threatened or hurt, someone was out specifically for Kevin, Bowen said. Howard had done his own digging Monday morning and found a possible crib for Chance. They drove over to a dilapidated Victorian in the Adams district. They would clean up real nice with a little TLC. Found Chance and his homies sitting on the porch, a Colt 45 in his hand, the kind you drink, not the kind you shoot. Malt liquor, but it was still a parole violation. Shit, one of Chance's buds said, and slammed over the porch railing. Chance didn't run. He poured the rest of his bottle out over the railing into the dirt on the side of the house. Nobody would notice it there, what with all the crap littering the little side run. Ever notice they all have that look, Howard said. The sharp eyes, unshaven, but not Hollywood cool unshaven, greasy hair, tats. Well, not all. Some perps wear suit and ties. They headed up the overgrown grass toward the porch. I can see your cops. Gonna bust me for drinking? Where were you Friday? Bowen flashed her badge. Friday, you expect me to remember that? It was 3 days ago, and that's not a very good alibi. I was here all day. Can you prove it? I'm not famous, you know. Don't have no paparazzi Nazis following me around all day. What's this all about? I'll ask the questions, Bowen said. And what are you guys, white lady and black dude cops, the affirmative action duo, superheroes? Your mouth is going to get you in trouble, boy, Howard said. He turned to Bowen and whispered, you have to arrest him. Got no charges. Drinking on parole. At least that can get you a hold on him so he doesn't blow town. Chance jumped the railing into the side run. Ran toward the back of the house. Bowen and Howard gave chase. Bowen gave it all she had. Howard hesitated a split second before dunking his $700 John Varvatos shoes into the muck on the side of the house. They caught Chance climbing the back fence, yanked him down to the ground. Howard stepped on his chest, holding him down. Sludge from his shoe impregnating Chance's shirt. Not that anyone would notice. Bowen called for backup. Not bad for a day's work, she said, as the black and white with Chance in the back pulled away. I could see Carroll Avenue standing in the heart of L.A., an echo of the past. Victorians up and down the street. Old-fashioned ambience. Not enough to keep the modern world from intruding, though. I saw our house. I loved that house. I loved its history. I loved that it had been moved from Bunker Hill and refurbished. I loved living there. I was born in the City of Angels, and I knew that someday I'd probably die here. There was really no place else to go, and then it hit me. I hoped it would hit Howard, too. Twilight rang its bell. Sunset laid down a crimson, orange, and blue veil over downtown. Howard parked in an overpriced lot, walked toward the Bradbury building, lights burning gold from most of the offices inside. From the outside, it's just another nondescript downtown building. Inside, Howard marveled at the amazing Italian Renaissance masterpiece. He'd heard of it, but had never been inside its walls of wrought iron, Italian marble, Mexican tile, wooden glass. Blazing sundown lights streaked in through the skylight, bathing the atrium lobby in haunting hues of sunset cream and gold. Howard looked at the card in his hand, went up to the third floor in the open grill elevator. If he loved old movies as much as I did, he'd know that Blade Runner and DOA were filmed here. He'd feel their presence. Some say that Marlowe had an office here in Chandler's books. Others disagree. Either way, he did have an office here in the movie Marlowe, starring James Garner. That was good enough for me. Howard entered the office listed on the card. Several desks filled the inside, all topped with computers, incongruous with the 1890s building. Maps of various L.A. neighborhoods filled the walls, including Carroll Avenue. "Mr. Hamm," Amanda Reisner, the blonde real estate agent Howard had met at our house, said. "You've changed your mind. The home on Carroll?" "I'm more into modern myself. I'm sure we have something," but she looked defeated. "Since you're a friend of the family, I know you already know about the shooting. It's going to be hard to sell with that, and I have to disclose it. But you don't look like someone who would be bothered by that." "I have been seeing things differently. If nobody wants the house, maybe Kev would want me to have it. But, I'm here about something else. Can you tell me when Nicole put the house on the market?" "I don't know if I should. I'm sure it's public record. I'm sure I could..." That's all the convincing it took. It didn't hurt that Howard was damn good looking. "Our first talks were about 6 weeks ago," she said. "When did you finalize the deal, sign the contract?" "March 8th. So about 5 weeks ago, that's right. "Thank you, Ms. Reisner." He shook her hand. "Amanda, please." "One more question, Amanda. Did Mr. Birch sign the contract?" "No, I don't believe he did. He was supposed to, but then his accident happened." "Thank you." His cell rang. "Bad news," Bowen said. "Chances clear. Alibi checks, and he'll probably be kicked on the parole violation. Jail overcrowding and all that." "Back to square one," Howard said. He called Nicole to tell her the news. Her phone rang and rang until the voicemail picked up. He didn't leave a message. Howard parked the Mustang a couple doors up from our house and waited. At 8 p.m., Nicole headed down the front steps to our car in the driveway. He followed, driving a block without his headlights before turning them on. He followed Nicole to the Angel's Flight Cafe right next to Angel's Flight. Not a place he'd normally go, not a place Nicole would normally go either. The retro cafe filled its walls with pictures of the original Angel's Flight, the new one be damned. Nicole walked to a dark booth in the center of the cafe. Howard discreetly pulled out his cell phone. He eyed Nicole and the good-looking Harry the Hipster type she met up with. She was a few years older than him, dressed to kill in heels and a simple but very short black dress. The couple sat at a table about halfway into the cafe. They couldn't keep their eyes, hands, or lips off each other in a huge exhibition of PDA. Bowen walked in the front door. Nicole looked up. The man with her tore for the back door, running straight into Howard. Howard grabbed his arm, twisted. There wasn't much fight in the man. Nicole looked to the rear and the front. No way out. Howard, Nicole's boyfriend in tow, and Bowen made a pincer movement on Nicole from both sides. No escape. "Why aren't you going after Chance?" Nicole shouted. "You just used Chance as a scapegoat. You got the Vine letter and held on to it, pretending it only came a couple of days ago." Instead of triumph, Howard's whole body fell in a wave of disillusion. "How'd you know?" Nicole's expression turned to defeat. "You put the house up for sale on your own well before Kevin's accident," Howard said. "Kevin loved that house. He never would have agreed to sell it. That why you had him killed, or this?" Howard glanced at Nicole's boyfriend. Bowen walked up behind Nicole. "Turn around, please." Cuffed her, then her boyfriend. "Who's this?" Howard said. "Just some boy toy." "Some boy toy who did your dirty work for you." Bowen turned Nicole and her boy toy over to uniformed cops who walked them out to their black and white. "I always hated that albatross of a house," Nicole said, as one of the cops put her in the back of the patrol car, her friend and another. "Kevin loved it more than he loved me." Bowen and Howard walked to the curb in the cool night air. Howard lurched into the street, watching the black and white roll off. Was that a tear in his eye? "I can't believe it was Nicole," he said. He looked like he was about to launch after the car. A mist filtered around the street lamps. Howard was lost in the haze. I felt my wandering tour of the City of Angels coming to an end as I hit Angels Flight one last time. If there was any kind of happy ending, it was that Howard bought our house. I knew he'd give it all the TLC I had. Nobody I would rather have living there. Everything morphed into mist and haze. I could hardly see them anymore, any of them. They were fading into the night like the wisp of smoke dancing to the snake charmer. Could barely hear them now. I heard one last thing Bowen said as she tried to pull Howard back onto the sidewalk. "Forget it, Howard. It's Bunker Hill." And then everything went blank.
Ghosts of Bunker Hill is copyrighted by Paul D. Marks. Music for the podcast is from Belwin, Inc. and is performed by Ethan Ulslin. The performance is supported by the Society for American Music's Sight and Sound Award and was obtained from the Silent Film Sound and Music Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.